Hey friends, welcome to the Well-Tended Life podcast. What is a well-tended life? Well, let me start by telling you what it's not. A well-tended life is not a set it and forget it life, nor is it a perfect life. It is, though, a life that is worked on every day, in the sunshine and through the storms. And the truth is, what worked in our life gardens last season may not work in the next. That's why, here at the Well-Tended Life podcast, we're interviewing people who have grown and bloomed true in a variety of seasons and who are willing to share their well-tended wisdom and weed-whacking advice with us. Listen in. Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happens after the show? You know, when the business of the podcast is done and it's just me and the guest. Well, today's episode is just that. It's an off-the-cuff chat with guest Melissa Bergstrom that took place as soon as we ended the formal podcast interview. Our chat was so good that as soon as we finished, I knew I had to make it into its own episode. Note, this after-the-show episode stands on its own, but I'm sure it's going to inspire you to go back and listen. If so, when you're done, just toggle back to episode 46, where she and I chatted about two words that can fertilize growth. We talked about OCD and her trip to one of Frances's famous homes, and so much more. But in this after-the-show conversation, listen in as we chat about how we never really know how our words will impact others. We talk about some of her Frances questions. Also, we talk about a recent experience with acupuncture and how we really need to give things time to work before we judge it or give it up, and so much more. I know you're going to find so many seeds of well-tended wisdom throughout, so without further ado, enjoy this after-the-show chat with Melissa Bergstrom.
All right, we're done.
Oh,
holy, so good.
Thank you so much. This was such a nourishing conversation. It just, my heart is so full of joy.
It was so, oh my gosh.
I would chat anytime.
I literally am. My cheeks hurt just from listening, and it's, your words, your symbolisms and all of the things that you pulled out of today, I know is going to reach some people, and tug at some heartstrings that needed to be tugged at. Is so good.
That means so much to me. Thank you. I'm so grateful to be having this conversation. I feel like there's so much that I've wanted to tell Frances, and I'm like, it's not possible anymore. And to be able to share, it with someone who has such a love for this in a similar way. And, you know, to what you said about like having someone hear something, I truly hope that happens, because I just feel like there's so many times in my life where I feel like I needed to hear something so specific at the right time. And when it happens, it's like, it literally just feels like finding a key to something.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like,
that woman had no idea that her comment about watering was no. Even a metaphor or something that was going to, and you never know. I mean, it's interesting, you know, Frances touched a lot of people, and I mean, we have handwritten letters from like Helen Keller, you know, to Frances, and, you know, President Garfield and all sorts of things, but she didn't know when she was writing those words that it was going to affect those people in this way, or even, you know, and that it would still, I mean, it was a commercial flop. I mean, it was actually the book that did not do well when she was alive. It wasn't even listed in her obituary when she died.
It was not in her obituary?
No, because it was a commercial failure. It did not.
I feel like it's going to be in my obituary because it's meant so much to me. That's wild. But
that's that whole thing of like, you never know what the words you say are going to affect people, whether it's today or it's 20 years from now, or it's 50 years from now, when your cousin's, you know, daughter repeats something that you said to her and passes it on to a whole nother generation. And it's just these little, you know, the little seeds we plant are our words.
The seeds. It is the seeds. I think Brené Brown has a saying where she talks about like permission slips, like on a similar note, like every time, like you do something and you say, I'm taking time for myself, or like, you know, today it was so, it felt so good to like name those things about my childhood in this space, because I think like, okay, yeah, this feels new and a little bit uncomfortable for me. But also if someone out there needs a permission slip to name it, like I don't want to hold back for myself. I don't want to hold back because someone else, you know, it's like that ripple effect.
Yeah.
Like you're saying.
100%. Yeah. Oh, well, you threw a big old stone in that the little pond inside the secret garden. Oh my gosh. Well, do you have any other questions for me about anything, or I mean like Francis related, or like you said there's like so many things you wanted to say to Francis, but I mean clearly I am not Francis, and I'm not channeling Francis in any way. Have you ever seen the movie Julia and Julia?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like that's my life with Francis, right? Like I feel like she and I are kind of like holding hands together, like telling this, you know, I'm just trying to kind of pull out those life lessons and share them with the world and help people, really my mission. And actually I even usually say like my current mission, cause I'm like you, like I'm love constantly that. On
love it.
My current mission is to help create fertile hearts. And so I want to help people clear away the clutter and the things that are keeping them from doing and, you know, opening that door and not being scared of what's behind it and embracing the what ifs. Which I love that. I leave a podcast and I'm like, let me tell you, like I become an expert about whatever it is that I'm like, I had no idea before. And now I'm going to be like, well, you know, if you just embrace your what ifs, everyone, like, but what if, like, I promise you, my husband's going to be like, was this on your podcast? Why do you keep saying tubers? Yes. But I think I wrote it down like four different times. I was like, What ifs? It's so good. I mean, so for me, that is what you're leaving on my heart from this interview.
That means so much to hear. Thank you.
So good.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, lest I keep you here all night or set up a weekly chat to, you know, keep our conversations going.
We can do that too. I'm always in the market for friends. So
the more the merrier with kindred spirits. Absolutely. Yes. The only question that like literally just popped up now about Frances, just spurred by what you said, do you think she had any sense of during her lifetime of like the gift that she had given other people, even if it wasn't with the secret garden? Like, cause I think in my mind, right, it's always this thing of like, wow, this person has impacted me so much. They must know. But then when you say that to yourself, like I've taught students for years and I think I always underestimate that. I'm like, oh, I'm not sure how much they got from it. And so I just like, I would love for her to have had that knowledge somehow.
You know, I hope so. I mean, I know that, you know, she said that, you know, I tried to write as much happiness into the world as possible. And I think that's because as you read, I mean, she didn't have the happiest of fairy tale lives. And so she crawled, I mean, her dad died when she was three, her, you know, the hardships of her family, they moved to the US, like the whole, her mom died when she was 18, then two failed marriages, you know, she was the breadwinner, which means basically she was a workaholic. Yep. And, you know, so, I think she knew what she needed and she tried to give the world what she needed. Right. Like, I mean, if that makes sense, she went searching for it in the stories. And I mean, I know she knew she was gifted. I mean, she started telling stories, you know, in pre-K, on the playground. Right. So she knew she was different. She knew she was, she could channel a story and it literally poured out of her. She never once was turned down by a publisher, in a 57, she wrote for 57 years and never once was turned down by a publisher. And really she was the most prolific writer of the time. Not just not just, you know, usually that's reserved for the big boys. And she did it, but I'll bet you there was a part of her that didn't, you know, I mean, I think all artists, you know, put their wisdom tucked inside their stories.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, and she was definitely, you know, she was an activist and yeah. believed in women's rights. And, you know, as you can tell, she had some, you know, ideas about nature and religion and, things that she wove into her stories and, yeah. and about death and life and, you know, all of the things. So, but I think, but really, you know, probably 75% of her books were, they were just romances, right? They were all romance novels. And I think that comes from really never having true love.
Yeah.
She felt kind of trapped into both marriages.
Yeah.
I think her true love was her children and her grandchildren. I would say that that's where she found true love. Everything else was really difficult because she was, you know, I always tell people she's like Oprah, right? She's that kind of famous.
Yeah.
And, so, which also meant that she had a very small circle of friends. And
yeah.
although she entertained a lot at a different level, she couldn't go to the grocery store without being hounded by the press. And so she lived a pretty, you know, tight, yeah. close life.
Yeah. Wow. That would be quite an experience. An experience. And so she's your great, great grandmother. So
yeah. she's my grandmother's grandmother. So Francis had two sons. One died at 16 of tuberculosis. The other is my great grandfather, Vivian. And Vivian had two daughters. One daughter, my aunt Dee Dee, never had any children. Mm-hmm. And then my grandmother had three kids, and there's five of us in this generation. Oh. So but my grandmother's generation didn't talk about her. And I say that, so Francis, wow. so her son was my grandmother's dad, and, she died in 1924, and he died maybe 4 or 5 years later. He died very young. He had a heart attack on a boat. Wow. And, my grandmother, was basically raised by the daughter-in-law, right? Single, wow. right? From, she was maybe 13 when he died.
Wow.
And he was, you know, he was the child of her father was the child of a very famous person. So what does a child of a famous person do? They're a recluse, right? Like they want out of the spotlight. They don't want anything near. He was also, he was the inspiration behind Little Lord Fauntleroy. So he was called Little Lord Fauntleroy his whole life.
Oh my goodness.
He actually moved in order to get out from under her shadow. He actually moved to Colorado to work for a publisher there. And he didn't tell them who he was or who he was related to. Wow. And she actually came to visit and hadn't been able to come to visit because she had some heart issues and the altitude. And so he moved there on purpose knowing this. And the neighboring paper got the scoop that she was coming to town.
Gosh.
And he got called into the office and was like, you know, Burnett, you know, how come we didn't know about this? And that's when he had to confess that it was his mother. And
whoa.
So he and his family led a very, very private life. So, I mean, my grandmother knew Frances as, someone who wrote some books, but she was Nanda. I mean, that's what she called her. She called her Nanda. And Nanda was awesome. And Nanda let her ride her bike through her house and, you know, told her stories and played with her on the ground. And she was super, super involved in that respect. But that being said, that generation lived off of the wealth of the books. Yeah. Right. And my grandmother renewed the copyrights, when her father died. And then, but then most of those basically ran out. My mother, every once in a while, used to get a random check for like $20 or something like that. But so they just, but they just like led a really normal life and didn't really know, like knew, but didn't really know. Like, it's interesting. Like they knew enough to know that my grandmother was there to help dedicate a fountain in the middle of Central Park to Francis.
Yeah.
But like, didn't really know the depth and the breadth of it. Matter of fact, it was all in boxes and it all landed on my mom's doorstep when my grandparents divorced. My grandmother sent all the Francis boxes to my mother and my mom started like opening it up going, wait a minute, wait, she didn't just write some books. And no. And by the way, she's responsible for the way the copyright laws are today. Like she had all of these things. And it was my mom who really sat down side by side with the biographers and started to help tell the story, because Frances, the one good thing is that she did have that house that she rented for 9 seasons. So she had, she crossed the Atlantic 33 times over her lifetime. So she wrote a ton of letters, right? That's what you do when you travel.
Yeah, of course.
And so she wrote a ton of letters and we had boxes and boxes and boxes of letters. They're now at Princeton. Where anybody can check them out. And we still own the copyrights to those letters, but they're the property of Princeton now.
Wow. That's so fascinating to
crazy.
Hear.
Like, I know, right?
It's wild. You know, you kind of think, again, I think it's like you think about the person in their life in their time. And then you think about like, you know, when you're someone that's like not in that circle or not within those relations, you have a different perspective, but what that's actually like. It's, and I want to be mindful of your time, but I'll just say quickly, I work at Orchard House where Louise May Alcott with the women. And so, you know, getting to kind of see and handle some of those artifacts, and I've met some of the family that are still there. It's fascinating because it's so much more like what you're saying in the sense that it's like, oh, there's a box of stuff. Okay. What are we going to do with this? Do we want to publish it? Do we want to edit it? Where is it going to live? It's just like so fascinating to have had that experience with someone that, and I've loved Louisa May Alcott for years. And actually, I think I read that her and Francis met once in Boston. Like they at least, I think they did actually meet in person, which I was like, you love when like your kindred spirits that you've never met know each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a really fascinating, experience to kind of have a little bit more of like an insider experience of like, you know, what do you actually do with these artifacts and where do they live and the copyrights? Cause that was something she kept with the family for years and then they kind of ran out. So what a thing. There's so much that goes with it.
It's crazy. Well, and you have inspired me because I have been to Maytham Hall, but I was in college. Actually, my husband and I went and lived in Turkey over the summer one summer. Wow. And on our way there, we met my mom and my dad at Maytham Hall. But I was at such a young age where I didn't really, like, I did appreciate it, but I didn't appreciate it. Like, I would have, like, today, I would be like you. I would be like, I need to take my shoes off. I need to touch this ground. Like, she stood here. Like, but it wasn't, for me, it wasn't until, I mean, I knew she was special my mother has spoken about her for years and like, you know, at events and things like that. So I understood her breadth and depth and even just talking to people on the street, like you tell her people who you're related to and they go crazy and goo goo eyes and right. And so all the little, you know, super, super fans like yourself for sure. And so I did understand that, but it wasn't until I read The Secret Garden when I needed to, when those words were critical for my health and my wellness, that I connected with her, but also, you know, connected with her words, but really connected with her and understood that these seeds, I 100% know that these seeds were left so that I could pull them out for my own life and then to share with others. And, I think even what you're doing on social media, you're doing the same thing, right? You're pulling the seeds out of your own life and what you're learning and you're turning around and sharing them, which, I'm good on you, brave girl, for getting needles put in your body. Scares the crap out of me. Like, I saw that post this morning. I was like, I'm gonna need to talk. I need to know what is this, because my brain, like, it's the same thing. You were just like, it's mortifying and terrifying and yet somehow amazing. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no, believe me. It had been years since I had done it. And when I was just saying this to my husband this week, I said, when I got the needles put in, I said, you know, they weren't that painful, but OCD brain went, because the guy just, he's very kind. He's very soothing. He goes, I'll be back in 45 minutes. And my brain just went, I'm sorry, what? I can't lay here for 40 minutes. I got to get up. I've got to move. And then that other voice went, oh, this will be interesting. This is an opportunity.
What if I can lay here for 45 minutes?
So I've gone twice so far in the last week. And the second time was much easier, because I had a moment where I was like, oh, I can't listen to anything. I can't read something right now. So I'm just going to kind of maybe stare at the ceiling. It just was an interesting like invitation to kind of do nothing, which for a brain like mine, I'm like, yeah. No, let's keep it going. But I was like, oh, I wonder what this will be like. At the very least, it'll be some new information.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I might need to put that in my what if pile.
Yeah. The thing that I said to myself,
not as awful as I think it's going
to
be.
Yeah. For what it's worth, the thing that I said to myself was, I was like, all right, you know, worst case scenario, he starts the treatment and you say, nope, this isn't for me. And you leave. I was like, okay, I could do that. I mean, I would have felt kind of silly, but like, that's a possibility. So, yeah.
Oh my God. Well, what has it made you feel like? Like, so what, do you mind if I ask like why you're getting?
No, I don't mind at all. So I have psoriasis, which is an autoimmune condition, and it basically shows up on my scalp. And I think it's connected a lot to, like, I've tried anti-inflammatory diets and all of that. And I definitely have like a blueprint of like what feels really good in terms of food and, you know, exercise and lifestyle. But I think stress is something that is like, will always be the thing that I just need to keep tending to. Like, I always thought I could set it and forget it. Can't.
No.
So I decided to just give it a try for that. I have a dear friend that's been going. And so I got a personal recommendation for an acupuncturist, which I think helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see. I've only been to two treatments, and, you know, talk about like giving it time. I had a moment just yesterday, I kid you not, where I was like, I don't know if it's working so far. And I had to go, Melissa, it's not magic, right? They'll even say like, this is not, people think of it as some, you know, mystical thing. And it's a modality that takes time. So, right.
Yeah. And half of it is already the good information that you've gotten back.
Totally.
Gosh, look at that. I can lay here for 45 minutes and it's actually pretty awesome.
It is. And I have to say the second time I did it, it felt very much like, not necessarily like a nap, but I just kind of felt a little bit more relaxed that day. And I was actually quite tired. So I got a wonderful night's sleep. I think it would actually be nice to do before bedtime.
Yeah.
So that you could kind of just, I've done that with massage in the past a few times before. It's like you do it before bed.
And yes. Every time I get a massage, I'm like, can I just pay you another, like whatever, to take a nap here, to just like quietly leave the room and then come back in with your little chimes. Like, I just need like 20 minutes.
I agree. It's so jarring to like get up and get into a car, or like take the train back to the apartment.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for this gift of your time and all your words. Well, amazing pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, I can't wait to go back and listen. I usually take like a week in between and then go back and listen through. Cause it's always funny to me, the things I miss in the middle of it all. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I didn't hear her say that or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So good.
Awesome. I'm excited too. Time is that magic ingredient when it comes to like going back and listening or watching. It's just like, which is also the joy, right? Of like reading a book again and again. It's
oh
just like,
yeah.
Find something new. So, thank you so much, Carrie. This was such a joy to chat with you.
Hey, friends. I hope you enjoyed today's little mini episode. On the horizon, I'll be sharing more here about Well-Tended You. It's a place and a space for workshops, courses, coaching, and retreats all designed to show you the keys to unlock your best well-tended life. Is this something you might be interested in? Would you be interested in potentially walking through a 6 to 12 week course towards a more well-tended you? Or perhaps digging into a life-tending journal class? What about seeding your dreams at a well-tended weekend retreat? If so, follow the Tell Me More link in the show notes and plant your email there to be the first to know about all the fun over at Well-Tended You. Thanks again for listening in, and until next time, y'all, blessings and blooms.